now to explain the ordinance briefly and to introduce our speakers. Here is KFRB's news director, Al Underwood.
Good afternoon, this is Al Underwood. Today we have with us Mr. Leonard Whitfield, speaking for the Do Pass voice of Ordinance 1068, Mr. Bob Johnson, speaking for the Do Not Pass voice of the ordinance and representing the Committee for Fair and Equal Taxes. The ordinance, if it passes, will eliminate the personal property tax and raise the sales tax to 3%. If it fails to pass, we will retain the personal property tax and our present 2% sales tax. Now our first speaker, Mr. Leonard Whitfield.
There has been a great deal said in the past few weeks about the proposal to eliminate personal property taxes and to substitute, therefore, an increase in the sales tax rate. Members of the City Council, the City Manager, other officials, and this speaker have appeared before numerous groups and on radio and television in an attempt to explain to the people of this community why personal property taxes should be abolished. To explain to the public many of the complexities and the administrative difficulties encountered in attempting to administer tax legislation relative to personal property taxes. To point out the unfairness, the inequities, and injustice of this source of taxation. We have quoted from a number of reports compiled from the findings of various tax study committees, legislative commissions, and others which indicate the widespread interest and demands made in regards to abolishing the personality tax. These reports, these committee reports, have come to us from numerous cities and counties and states throughout the nation. The facts and findings of these group support conclusively the desirability and necessity for abolishing what, in my opinion, is one of the most unpopular, inequitable, and unjust revenue measures ever conceived by taxing authorities. We have shown you that we have a law which requires the taxation of property that in many cases is impossible to value, difficult and costly to locate, and which creates widespread resentment and rebellion in those on whom it is levied. We have shown where this source of revenue is not economically feasible when compared to the cost of administering the legislation. Through the years, we have heard loud outcries for elimination of governmental waste, for the reduction of administrative overheads, and for the increased efficiency in municipal administrations. I say to you with full knowledge and sincerity, and it is my profession to know, that nowhere in the operations of this city will you find a more flagrant waste of your money than in those excessive expenditures necessary to levy, assess, and collect personal property taxes. Now, my office could forget these costs. We could go ahead, as has been done in the past, and follow the concept of self-taxation. That concept which follows the theory, report what you feel like, and pay if you like. We could ignore all of the generally accepted principles of good, sound municipal financing. We could turn our backs on the glaring injustice imposed upon the relatively few individuals who have built this community, and those who work unceasingly to build an organized society which envelops a reasonable standard of life. We could ignore the future welfare of ours and your children and other residents who will surely come into this valley. We could sit back and say to ourselves that God is in the heavens, there is peace in our lives, and all is well. We could follow the line of least resistance and let things continue as they were to a degree in the past, reflecting public apathy, reflecting the philosophy that this is a temporary settlement. It will never become a permanent thriving community. Live for today and make as much as you can, for tomorrow we leave. Now, the city of Fairbanks has been incorporated for over 57 years. Some of you were among those who settled this valley and were responsible for the founding of this community. There have been hundreds of families join you whose interest is limited to the great human need to band together in organizing a society in which we can rear our children, earn our livelihood, establish a good standard of living, and provide ourselves with the common services and facilities of an organized governmental unit. The development of this community has been long, hard, and often painful. The few who have stayed on through the years have found themselves unable to bear the financial burden necessary to finance most of the services and facilities necessary for preservation of health and comfort. So we find a small city, one that is only a little over 2.5 square miles, that after over 57 years still does not have water in some of its homes, still has no sewers in some areas, and still has a street system that is predominantly substandard, street lighting that is inadequate, almost no sidewalks or gutters. We have a fire department that doesn't even meet the minimum recommendations of the national underwriters. A recent court decision reflected how, through the lack of financing in the past years, we were not able to afford and provide trained personnel, firefighting equipment, and the facilities necessary to save a human life. Consequently, this city was ruled as civilly responsible for the death of one of our citizens. We have the undisputed inadequate police protection. I'm sure I don't need to remind you that up until just a few years ago, you had no financial organization, no one to establish and maintain budgetary controls over the operations of this government, no substantial or organized activity conducted in acquiring and providing the needed revenues. How quite often this community found itself in that perennial struggle for financial survival, and how the legislators had to declare emergencies to even meet payrolls and to pay the bills owed to the community. However, just prior to 1959, a Department of Finance was established within the administrative departments of this city, and an accounting system was established. Budgetary controls and standards were enacted. In just 2 years, the financial position of this city has developed to one which now finds us in a position to start providing the services and facilities which are 25 to 30 years late in coming. Last year was a year in which many of these improvements and facilities were begun. In the current year, we have scheduled the biggest capital improvement program ever to be attempted in any 1 year heretofore. It is the responsibility of my office to project and anticipate the necessary financing for these improvements, to enforce the legislation designed and intended to produce revenues, to maintain budgetary controls, checks and balances, and other procedures calculated to reduce operating costs, to eliminate waste and duplication, and to assure ourselves that we are utilizing every source of revenue available to us. Now, after all that has been said in the past few weeks for both for and against this proposed Ordinance 1068, I feel that in summary we might summarize the real issue to this question. It is now up to the people of this community, the registered voters of our city, to make the decision which will result in this conclusion. Do we want to continue in the same slow-moving, slow-progressive city that has developed through these 57 years? Or do we want to reduce these operating costs, substitute revenue measure which will produce almost twice as much net revenue into the treasury funds of the city without any additional financial burden on the citizens of the city, and thereby produce the revenue necessary to provide you with these improvements? We've projected over $8 million worth of capital improvements for this year alone, recognizing that in the near future years, there'll be many additional millions of dollars worth of improvements which this city needs. It is my opinion that by substituting this 1% sales tax and replacing the personal property tax, that we will have made a great step forward in improving the financial policies and position of this city, designed to have a long-range effect not only today but on future generations of this city, and will be able to provide for us the monies necessary to accomplish the much-needed capital improvements.
All right, thank you, Mr. Whitfield. You have just heard the City Comptroller-Treasurer, Mr. Leonard Whitfield, speaking in favor of passing Ordinance 1068. Now, representing the Committee for Fair and Equal Taxes, we'll hear from Mr. Bob Johnson.
Thank you, Al, and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Over these same past few weeks, which Mr. Whitfield spoke of, we have heard the issue in this particular instance of Ordinance 1068 described in many manners and in many ways and by many different succinct definitions. At times it has been, shall personal property taxes be abolished? At other times it has been, shall the city progress? At still other times, and particularly by our group, it has been, shall we have fair and equal taxes? Our group feels distinctly that progress is necessary. We have worked, many of us individually and others as groups within the city, to aid in bringing about that progress in the past and are still doing so. We feel, however, that Ordinance 1068 should be examined extremely closely, not for what it purports to do, but for what it actually does. As Al Smith used to say, let's take a look at the record. If Ordinance 1068 is passed, we shall see for the first time in the history of this city, so far as I know, the deliberate exemption from taxes of more than $5 million in assessed evaluation. Now, this assessed evaluation, by its very odd nature, is not in reality personal property. Instead, it is real property, which by legal definition is called personal property. It involves leaseholds on federal ground in the Alaska Railroad area. It involves leaseholds on city land within the city of Fairbanks itself, and holding leases which state that they shall be taxed as personally. Thus, we create a tax-exempt group. Now, the second thing it does is to relieve a group which demands the most in governmental services from paying a pro rata share for those services, the extra ones, that is. The merchants will pay no inventory tax. Now, let us suppose, for example, using a hypothetical case, that one of the chain store giants from out of the states should come in here and lease space in a building, owning no property themselves, and operate within the city of Fairbanks. They would be in the odd position of paying no direct taxes to the city of Fairbanks. They would, it is true, pay gross business tax to the state, which would be prorated back. They would, it is true, in the rent which they paid, in reality pay the taxes on the building which they occupy. But the inventory tax would be their sole direct tax, the sole direct link with the city of Fairbanks. From this, they would be excluded. Would it follow, then, that they would be willing to forego complete police protection, having the fire station close to their store, demanding a paved street for their particular location, having a sidewalk for foot traffic to travel on, having storm drains to protect their inventory in the basement? We believe not. We believe they would insist on these things, and rightly so. Now, it must follow that if someone is relieved from a tax, and the tax is necessary for the operation of government, someone else must pick up the burden. The burden with sales tax is placed directly on the back of the consumer. This is a 50% increase in consumer taxes. It will, if the city's projections are correct, bring in approximately from $400,000 to $490,000 per year. We believe that this burden is being placed upon those who can least afford to pay. We believe that 3% deducted from a welfare check, an ESC check, or a workman's comp check, in lieu of receiving 2/3 of the same from an inventory tax on the merchants, is unfair. We believe it is definitely unfair. Now, oddly enough, most businesses pass on their inventory tax to the consumer wherever possible. And the consumer pays it anyway, but not by the same amount. In fact, at times the ratio is 5-1 in favor of the sales tax. 5 times as much sales tax as would be paid by the same consumer with inventory tax. Now, we make no attempt to defend personal property taxes. Personal property taxes, by textbook definition, by application, and by their very administration here in Fairbanks, are both odious and distasteful. We definitely believe steps could be taken which would alleviate some of the odious nature of this particular tax. We definitely believe these steps should be taken. We advocate their immediate enactment. But we do not believe in burning down the house to get rid of the bees in the attic. We do not believe in placing a tremendously unfair burden on those least able to pay it in order to achieve relief from a present odious situation. In short, we don't believe that two wrongs make one right. Now, if it is true that personal property tax costs as much as the city says it does for its enforcement and administration, it would be reasonable to believe that by the enactment of this ordinance, there would be a substantial increase in taxes received by the city. First of all, they could cut their payroll a large amount. And for those who have not bothered to check the last balances of the city, we should like to state to them that the city operated on a budget of $2.4 million. In 1959, $2,400,000. That at that time it had 111 employees at the start of the year and recommended that they be increased to 124 during that year. The proposed budget for this year was $3,900,000. And the employees were to be increased to 200 even. Now, some of these increases were from the assumption of state or federal duties, such as the 17 people involved at the jail. But others were plain and simple additions to the city payrolls. We believe that the city of Fairbanks definitely will need funds to progress. We believe that the city of Fairbanks must progress. But we believe that progress without fair and equal taxes destroys the very element which is attempting to progress. We believe that Ordinance 1068 threatens the future of the city of Fairbanks by undermining the present base of taxation in relation to benefits gained therefrom. The 50% increase in sales tax does not reflect the gains to be received by the individual citizens. It does not reflect the nature of the services rendered by government to those citizens. We believe that the best thing that can possibly be done for the future of Fairbanks is to vote no on Ordinance 1068 and then cure the existing ills through prompt and immediate correction. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. You've just heard from Mr. Bob Johnson, representing the Committee for Fair and Equal Taxes. In one moment, we'll permit both gentlemen time for rebuttals on their statements. Now, the KFRB switchboard is open at Globe 22323. If you have a legitimate question that is still unanswered in your mind, we want you to call us at Globe 22323 and direct your question to either Mr. Whitfield or Mr. Johnson. We want the voters to be completely informed when they go to the polls this coming Tuesday. Globe 22323, if you have a pertinent question on Ordinance 1068. Now we'll have our rebuttals first. Mr. Whitfield, you'll be permitted. Well, we'll have time with about 5 minutes. Leonard, we'll give you 5 minutes for a rebuttal on the statements made by Mr. Johnson. Mr. Leonard Whitfield.
As I recall, Bob mentioned that by eliminating personal property from the tax rolls, that we would, in one broad sweep remove approximately $5 million worth of assessed valuations from our tax rolls. I feel that he was speaking of leasehold interest, so I would like to explain some of the little-known facets of leasehold interest. The Appraisal and Assessment Dictionary defines a leasehold as the temporary estate of the lessee and property acquired by virtue of a lease. In other words, for the purpose of taxation, a value is placed on a lessee's interest in property he uses or controls under a lease, even though he doesn't actually own the property. In leasing real property, the owner assigns a portion of his right to the property to the through the lessee through the execution of a contract, which allows the lessee the privilege of using the property for a given length of time for a consideration. The right to use this property is called, for this purpose, the leasehold interest. And it is the leasehold interest which we must evaluate and assess. Now, I don't feel that Bob would object too much if I refer and quote, in addition to the comments just made on that subject, to his comments on March 17th in relation to the same subject. And I quote him. Now about the leaseholds and their tax-free status. Some people didn't seem to understand them. One pointed out the city charter says they could go ahead and tax these people anyway. I regret to say that the federal courts say otherwise, and I don't think the city charter will take precedent over a federal ruling. It is entirely possible. That is a matter for the law. The Chugach Electric case in Anchorage was very conclusive in establishing that as far as the federal courts are concerned, leaseholds on federal property are to be taxed as personal property. If we have no personal property tax, the warehouses and the rest of the establishments occupying the leaseholds on the Alaska Railroad Industrial Area will according to that decision, be taxed free. In addition, the city has leased property itself with the distinct stipulation, now in full force and effect, that all buildings, structures, and the rest will be taxed as personal property. These also will be tax-free. End of his quote. Now, according to state law, the leasehold interest in land shall be classified as real property. Our municipal charter is in harmony with the provisions of state law, for we read in section 6.3 of the charter, the power of taxation shall extend to private leaseholds, contracts, or interest in land or property owned or held by the United States, the state, or its capital subdivisions to the extent of such interest. Now, Mr. Johnson has stated that according to the decisions rendered in the Chugach Electric case in Anchorage, they were very conclusive in establishing that as far as the federal courts are concerned, leaseholds on federal property are to be taxed as personal property. Now, the man who is now the assessor for this city just happened to be the one who made the assessment on Chugach's leasehold interest in the Alaska Railroad Industrial Area of Anchorage. He states that the issues in the Chugach case was not whether the assessment should be classed as personal property or real property, but they were as to whether the city of Anchorage had the right to tax in any manner an REA cooperative such as Chugach Electric. To his knowledge, the question as to whether the leasehold interest should be taxed as personal property or real property, or whether the leases on federally owned property could be taxed at all, were never raised. During his service with the city of Anchorage, he did tax on the leaseholds on federal realty, and he classed them as real property taxes, and to his knowledge, to this very day, all of the leasehold interest in the Alaska Railroad Industrial Area in the city of Anchorage is carried on the real property tax rolls. Now, to show the error of this statement a little further, I'd like to refer you to the case of the United States and Borg Warner Corporation versus the City of Detroit, the case of Continental Motors Corporation versus Township of Muskegon, and the City of Detroit versus the Murray Corporation. Now, on March the 3rd in 1958, the United States Supreme Court decided all three of these cases and ruled that taxes levied and assessed on leaseholds on federal realty was subject to ad valorem taxes. In sustaining the trial court's decision, the United States Supreme Court pointed out that it is well settled that the government's constitutional immunity does not shield private parties with whom it does business from the state taxes imposed on them merely because all or part of the financial burden of the tax eventually falls on the government. I have a sample copy of the assessment forms used by Sturgis, South Dakota, and other places on file in my department, and it is clear that taxes levied against leasehold interest in real estate are classified as real taxes, not personal property taxes. Just one thing further on the statement, that the city has leased property itself with the distinct stipulation that all building structures and the rest will be taxed as personal property. Now, up until this year, to my knowledge, the city of Fairbanks has never assessed nor carried on its tax rolls leasehold interest. There has never, to my knowledge, ever been a tax levied on any leasehold interest in this city. So the proposal to abolish personal property taxes will not now remove $5 million worth of property heretofore carried on our tax rolls, because they've never been carried on the tax rolls in the first place. And in the second place, it is the prescribed procedure generally accepted by municipal assessors that all leasehold interest in real estate is to be classed as real property taxes. Now, to my knowledge, the city of Fairbanks has only one lease in existence which refers to the manner in which taxes levied against property covered by the lease are to be classified. Even this lease has no reference to leasehold interest and their taxability. As far as the taxes levied against the buildings and the structures, they have always, heretofore, and will continue in the future, in compliance with all applicable laws, have been classified as real property taxes and not as personal property taxes.
Right, thank you, Mr. Whitfield. You've heard Mr. Leonard Whitfield, the city controller-treasurer, with his rebuttal to the statements made by Mr. Johnson. We'll give Mr. Johnson his time right after we take time out for station identification.
You're in tune with Full Range Radio for Alaska's Interior, KFRB 900 in Fairbanks. Once more, here's Mr. Underwood.
You're listening to a debate on Ordinance 1068, which will come up to the voters of Fairbanks this coming Tuesday, March 21st. Now, Mr. Johnson, once again, representing the Committee for Fair and Equal Taxes, will be permitted his rebuttal on the statements made by Mr. Whitfield. Mr. Robert Johnson.
Well, first, I would like to continue with the same subject, and especially as it refers to the particular lease of the city, which I read only yesterday, and a second lease of the city, and since there are only two in existence, it is terribly hard to keep from naming these. The first one states categorically that all structures will be taxed as personally. I would be very happy to show that to Mr. Whitfield and to acquaint him with the details of it, but Title Insurance and Trust can furnish him with a copy of it, and I will be happy to show it to the people and read directly from it on television at a later time today to clarify that issue. Now, as to a leasehold interest is not necessarily the same as the buildings created on the property. We're getting into a matter of terminology, and a definition of terms should be made to keep it square. Perhaps this is just as confusing as the matter involving the school district. Will the school district drop personal property taxes or won't they? Up until last night, I thought that one was solved as far as I was concerned. But after being tackled by two lawyers in a row, I'm not sure anymore. I'm not even sure that should this go through, the school district couldn't levy personal property taxes within the city of Fairbanks, because the Constitution states definitely that until such time as school districts are replaced, they shall continue to operate under existing law. Now, the question comes down to the fact of whether or not an ordinance is a law. If it is a law, in the full sense and meaning of the Constitution of the state of Alaska, then the Fairbanks School District can levy personal property tax not only outside the city, but inside, because you can't change the constitution of the state with a home rule charter, regardless of what any of us might think. But back to this matter of these various leasehold interests, I also knew that they hadn't been picked up on the tax rolls. I was a little bit surprised to find that they hadn't, because the Alaska Railroad area was annexed some time ago. Now, as to the Chugach decision, and there are many others in the federal courts, Chugach Electric was a nonprofit cooperative. They established their powerhouse in the Alaska Railroad industrial area, and many of their transmission lines passed through the city of Anchorage. They went to court in Anchorage for an interrogatory decree. They wished to find out, along with the city, whether they could be taxed or not. That is the beginning of their case. But the courts went along, and the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals cited in their ruling several cases which stated that leaseholds on federal property would be taxed as personally. And the Supreme Court of the United States refused to issue a writ of certiorari because they claimed there was nothing constitutional involved. The decision still stands. And regardless of what the initial issue was, the corollary matter of what kind of taxes could be levied was in the final decree. Now, as to levying ad valorem taxes, may I remind each and every one of you regarding those other federal court cases that ad valorem taxes include personal property. We've heard a great deal from the city about how 18 states have got rid of personal property. Let me tell you about a city in Alaska that got rid of personal property. The city of Juneau, Alaska. And they have 3% sales tax, too. Their city council down there, since the first of the year, called for a special increase in real property taxes of 10 mils. In short, they went from 14 mils last year to 24 mils this year, because they had no other source of taxes to turn to. Now, we have asked the city the question, what would they do in event we went into what is known up here as a bad year, in event that sales tax does not come up to their predictions and expectations? What if it should drop $200,000 or $300,000? Where would they make up the difference? They have only two taxes available to them. And incidentally, if sales tax did drop that much, they'd have a drop in their gross business license taxes as well, their rebates from the state. So it would be reasonable to expect that they would have about $225,000 to $250,000 to make up. Where would they get the money? They have only one other source of revenue, and that is real property. Now, when you get it down to an either-or basis, when you get it down to the basis that every time someone orders from a catalog, for example, there is an opportunity for an addition to real property taxes, then you have gotten to a point where the city is in a dangerous position. Because every time you slap one element in the face, you alienate them, and every time you add to the burden of the other, you alienate them. And you have only two tax-paying elements, those who buy here and those who own here. Ladies and gentlemen, Ordinance 1068 is not for the good of the city. Exactly who would be served by its particular and oftentimes somewhat vague provisions, we are not certain. But it is a firm belief of the Committee for Fair and Equal Taxes that this city will best be served if Ordinance 1068 is voted down.
Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Bob Johnson speaking for the Committee for Fair and Equal Taxes with his rebuttal on the statements made by Mr. Whitfield. Once again, if you have a legitimate question that is still unanswered, we ask you to call us at Globe 2-2323. That's Globe 2-2323. Direct your question to either Mr. Whitfield or Mr. Johnson. Now, gentlemen, we do have some questions here. Leonard, I think we'll go back to you again and start with some questions for the city representative here. Mr. Whitfield, if the sales tax passes, will they still try to collect the delinquent personal property taxes due and go after the people who have neglected to file a personal property tax up to this time?
At the present time, the city of Fairbanks has several hundred delinquent personal property tax bills still unpaid on its accounts. We're at the present time processing the legal paperwork to enforce civil actions necessary to collect these taxes. It's our intent, and the program is outlined, will be that we will continue to collect all liabilities presently owed to the city. And regardless of which way Ordinance 1068 is decided, we will continue to collect all the liabilities owed to the city.
I see. Thank you. That answered that one for us. Mr. Johnson, I don't know whether this question should be directed to you or not, really. What would happen if everybody refused to pay the personal property tax?
Well, frankly, you'd have chaos. They've had cases like that in the United States. They had Shea's Whiskey Rebellion, where everybody refused to pay a tax on their moonshine back a good many years ago. I think most people are reasonable enough to accept, whether they like a particular tax or not, the fact that taxes are necessary if we're to govern ourselves. Now, if everybody refused to pay the personal property tax, undoubtedly it would be the beginning of the end for the city of Fairbanks, because they wouldn't pay any other tax either. and I just can't conceive such a situation.
Right, thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Whitfield, even though you're on record as opposing all property taxes, don't you believe that the personal property tax can be improved through changes in regulation and administration?
The things that make personal property taxes most difficult to administer is two things, mainly. The fact that personalty is often difficult to locate. And even when it is located, very often it's difficult to value that property. Now, we can go into the area of specific exemptions. Now, we have that kind of an example right in our own present personal property tax structure. For example, if you have a home that has $10,000 worth of household goods and an automobile, you pay 18 mils against that full $10,000. But if your neighbor has his assets tied up in corporation stocks or bonds or bank accounts, he pays no tax whatsoever on his $10,000 worth of assets. It's my philosophy, and I feel that as good, sound financial practices, that when you get into the area of arbitrary exempting certain chosen groups or factions, you are imposing an even greater hardship and inequity on those to whom you do look to for taxes.
All right, Mr. Whitfield, there is a second part to this question. If the personal property tax cannot be collected in the school district, how does the city propose to replace this loss to the schools?
Unlike the city of Fairbanks, the same taxpayers in the school district are predominantly both real and personal property taxpayers. In other words, the same person that is going to pay the real property tax substantially at the present time is also paying their requirements from personal property tax. What in effect then that you would have would be, instead of paying the projected $400,000+ that the school district needs from general property taxation being split between real and personal, the same $430,000 or thereabouts would be collected by substantially the same taxpayers on their real property. So their dollar amount of tax burden will be no greater.
Right, Leonard, thank you very much. Bob, here's another one of those questions like we had yesterday. Mr. Johnson, who all is behind the Committee for Fair and Equal Taxes, a group of merchants or individual persons or what?
Well, basically, I think the best way to answer that, who is behind it, we have had contributions as of last night from in excess of 232 people, if I'm not mistaken, all told. They cover almost every walk of life. In fact, one thing that is interesting is that at least 30 of them are outside the city and can't vote on this. But they feel that they should be able to vote, and they should be able to have a say on it. So they have contributed to us in order to make it known that they stand behind this. They feel that it jeopardizes the school district. Now, I realize the sinister overtones of the particular questions, and I say to them the same as I say to anybody else who asks this question, if they will come down to our headquarters at 305 Noble, we will be happy to acquaint them with full details regarding the committee, but I believe it would take a little too much time here.
Mm-hmm. Fine. Well, Bob, we'll come right back with another one directed to you. What happened to the original group of people that you purportedly represented as being against this bill, namely the liquor dealers and the Central Labor Council? And I don't know whether we should ask you that or not. Is it true that you plan to leave town shortly?
Well, you know, that's a question that, like Mark Twain's death, was grossly exaggerated. The News Miner reported, I believe it was in March of 1958, that my wife had left me and I was leaving town. And of all of us that were surprised by this, my wife and I were the two that were most surprised. I realize that this disappoints people, but I'm sorry it still happens to be that way. The other side of that, what happened to the original group? The liquor dealers announced categorically, and the announcement was made in front of the Chamber of Commerce of Fairbanks, that they had no intent of opposing the enactment of this particular ordinance. So far as I know, they have stuck strictly and wholly to this intent.
Fine, right, thank you, Bob. Leonard, back to you again. If the city tax assessor comes to assess my personal property and does not have a search warrant, do I have to let him in, or can I refuse legally and require a warrant?
It'll take me a little while to find that section in the state and municipal law that provides for this thing, but maybe I can quickly find it here. Both in Chapter 174 of the 1957 session laws of the state and in our own Code of Ordinances, and I believe that it's Section 5.16, the assessor is definitely empowered with the authority to go into the homes of people, into the places of businesses. He has the right of subpoena. He has the right to take depositions from property owners under oath and to do whatever is necessary to locate, to levy and assess taxes against personal property.
Fine, thank you, Leonard. Bob, do you feel it is any more fair for a businessman not to be taxed on inventory than it is for a person not having to pay taxes on their savings accounts?
That is a difficult one to answer in this respect, that it contains two things which are totally opposite and separate from one another. The element of fairness on taxing saving accounts is a matter that has been handled in some cities. In fact, quite a few cities and states, for that matter, do tax savings accounts on a set day of the year. One city which I formerly lived in did that, and on the day before, there was a mass evacuation of cashier's checks out of that bank, and on the day after the tax was assessed, there was a mass return to the bank. In reality, they are one and the same, but the element of fairness there is very hard to assess. Certainly up here, in the bluntest sense, we should do nothing to discourage saving because the banks and financing are also a key to our growth. And if we discourage people from saving money, the banks are going to go down and our
financial records of businesses and other sources of information necessary to locate and identify personal property.
All right, thank you, Leonard. Here's a question directed to both gentlemen. Bob, we'll let you have a crack at it first. What would happen if the state were to impose a 3 or 4% sales tax, as many of the states do now?
Well, it would be, in this case, so far as the city is concerned, ex post facto. In other words, the law states that you can't wipe out this city tax because it's already in existence and it was legal under the state law. So the city could continue any tax now in effect, and the state tax would go on top of it. Now, this has happened in other states, and the exact process seems to be that the state would either take over as the collecting agent for the city, or the city would take over as the collecting agent for the state, whichever was the most expedient and efficient, and then one would rebate their share, the share to the other that belonged to them. At least that is the accepted process. However, I'd like to say that I refuse to stand behind that with the present legislature. I'd rather wait and see what they devise.
Well, Leonard, once again, we'll word that one again for the people who might have missed it. What would happen if the state were to impose a 3 or 4% sales tax as many of the states do now?
Well, actually, I find it difficult to relate that question to the issue that we're here to discuss. First of all, we're here to discuss the fact that we are attempting to substitute one source of revenue, which in the opinion of trained and professional finance officers is a more fair and equitable source of revenue to the people, or from the people of this city for our governmental operations, for one which history is full of experiences which conclusively points out that it's unfair and inequitable and unjust. However, I feel that inasmuch as that we've fairly conclusively projected the fact that this is not going to result on any additional total tax dollars required of the people of this community, but rather that it would tend to have just the opposite effect in that it broadens the tax base. Instead of having just a few, like the 13,000 people in this city, paying the full tax load, we would get it from others who at the present time do not contribute to the total tax dollar, that they would actually be saving as a result of Ordinance 1068. So if the state does go ahead and impose a 3 or a 4% sales tax, or even a 1% sales tax on a statewide basis, the overall effect on the people of this city would be no different if Ordinance 1068 passes or it's rejected.
Fine, thank you, Mr. Whitfield. Mr. Johnson, another question. How, without a sales tax, can we possibly hope to collect any taxation from the hundreds of local people who own neither real nor personal property?
Well, we have a sales tax. It brings in roughly $970,000 a year, I believe, according to the city's projection for 1961. Now, as to those who own neither real nor personal property, under the form sent out by the city, I know of no one that doesn't have clothing, and at least they aren't walking the streets lately. And as a result, I feel that very nearly everyone qualifies for some personal property.
Right, fine. Thank you, Bob. Leonard, rather a blunt question. Who is supporting the city's financial fight on this bill?
At the present time, the city of Fairbanks has not spent one penny in any of its activities, either by the way of advertising or radio or television broadcast. I think that the city of Fairbanks did possibly spend either $4 or $5 for a newspaper ad that was recently placed with the News Miner, but at the present time, the city has not paid out any money whatsoever for this purpose. The money that has been received for these television and radio broadcasts have been received from merchants, private individuals, and taxpayers.
All right, fine, Leonard. Thank you very much. A question directed to both of you gentlemen. A three-part question, by the way. Does it not appear that the city is using our eagerness to get rid of the personal property tax as a lever to force us to vote in favor of raising the sales tax, which penalizes large families? And in conjunction with this, why do they not allow us to vote yes or no on each question separately? Mr. Johnson?
Well, the first part of that, to me, it does appear that way. And I have said so several times in the past. In fact, I'm not altogether certain that what has been done can be done, but I don't know enough about the law to say that they can't do it. At any rate, it is being done. Now, as to why they don't allow people to vote yes or no on each question separately, I don't know. I do not have the answer to that and would not attempt to answer it. Perhaps Mr. Whitfield can explain that one, although I understand the decision was made by the council itself.
Leonard, would you care to comment on that? Why do they not allow us to vote yes or no on each question separately?
First of all, it isn't the question that's being placed to the people. The question that's being placed to the people, will they accept substituting a 1% rate or increase in the sales tax for the personal property tax? And that's the question that is being placed to them. Now, let's look at it from a logical standpoint. Suppose that the council did. Suppose that they were foolish enough to allow the people of this community to vote to eliminate or abolish the personal property tax and not provide for any other source of revenue to replace that source of revenue. Now, we're estimating or projecting around $323,000 worth of personal property taxes for the year 1961, providing that we keep the personal property. Now, what would happen if we lost that source of revenue, that $323,000? Where would that lost revenue come from? The answer is very obvious. It would come from the very people that right now is grossly overburdened with their financial requirements for the operations of the schools and the city. It would come from the full-time, permanent, long-time residents who have enough faith in the development of this community to have invested in real property. It would come from the real property owners. Instead of the mill levy being 18.5 mills, it would be over 23 mills. So that's what would happen.
I see, fine, Leonard. The third part of this question is it not true that an Anchorage member of the Alaska State Legislature has introduced a bill to do away with the personal property tax?
I don't know. I don't know.
Bob, fine, go ahead.
That's House Bill 204. It was introduced by Mr. Pratt of Anchorage. It has cleared two committees within the legislature, and it would definitely do away with personal property taxes throughout the state. And another point that I would like to say, Mr. Whitfield said here, if they were foolish enough, would do away with this $323,000 in revenue. It was my understanding that personal property tax was so difficult to administer that it brought in only a few cents on the dollar. Now, actually, it would be a piddling small loss then, if they did in reality vote it out, because it's the net that would be lost, not the gross. And I don't know what the few cents on the dollar ratio is, but it would not approach $323,000, I'm certain.
Right, fine. Thank you, Bob. Mr. Whitfield, once again, as you said, the people in the school district, real property taxes will go up to compensate for property tax losses. Is it fair for them to also have to pay the city sales tax of 3%?
I don't know as that we could draw any difference between the situation that they are faced with when they go into the city of Seattle or any other city on the outside for a visit to either shop or anything else that they might do, that they have to pay the sales tax in that city. The fact is that this city is concerned with the welfare of this community in its requirements for services and facilities that this community needs. And these are sources of revenue that the legislators or the council of the city have enacted into law to provide this source of revenue. So I can't see that it's unfair to anyone, providing that they come in and use these facilities and these services to contribute to part of the revenue necessary to provide those services, notwithstanding that they might live outside the city.
All right, fine, Leonard, thank you. Bob, another one for you. If you are a permanent resident, as you claim, getting personalities in here again, why are you espousing the cause of the transient who doesn't bear his share of the cost of running our city government?
Well, that, as you brought out, is a highly personal question, and it is a good deal like asking me when I stopped beating my wife. It is by no means fair, and I'm certain it was intended that way. I do not feel that I am espousing the cause of the transient. In fact, I think the transient is a ghost. I think the whole country's geared up to him and he doesn't exist. I think, frankly, that it's one of the greatest legends that's ever been espoused. We all talk about these transients. And the other evening, we drew an example which we feel is totally fair. We checked on the number of hotel rooms in this city. We filled every single one of them every day of the year. We had every one of them spend, every person in every one of those hotel rooms spend $35 per day, which the Alaska State Chamber claims is the average brought in by tourists. And we proved conclusively that this would contribute $33,000 per year in sales tax. Now, since sales tax brings in approximately $485,000 per year, somebody locally is paying a little bit of this. I'd keep my eye on that referee because somebody is paying it, and that is definite. Now, about this school district deal, we don't have a parallel situation with Seattle. I'd like to bring that out. Washington has a state sales tax. It's the same throughout the state. If you order from a catalog store serving out of Seattle and you live over in Yakima or Wenatchee or Spokane, you still pay your 4% sales tax. It's paid throughout the entire state of Washington. Furthermore, Washington has an interstate agreement with many of the other states collecting taxes. And if you order from a catalog store in, say, Illinois, they will rebate back to the state of Washington the sales tax on that particular item. Fairbanks is totally different, and this proposal portends to create, within the city limits of Fairbanks, an island of 3% taxation which may not last beyond the tenure of the school district. We can't predict the future, but we can say that it may not. And further, 60% of the people in this community live outside the city limits of Fairbanks. I frankly believe that even though they have no voice, they are concerned with the outcome of this. I believe that if they are the transients the gentleman referred to, I would be happy to represent them because I don't believe that you create good for all by creating ill for part.
Right. Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. We'll be back with more questions. We've got quite a slug on. We appreciate everyone calling. Once again, the number is Globe 22323 if you have a pertinent question on Ordinance 1068. We'll be back in one moment after station identification.
This is Full Range Radio for Alaska's Interior, KFRB 900 in Fairbanks, Alaska. Standard time now 27 minutes before 2 o'clock. Once again, Mr. Underwood.
Back with our questions on Ordinance 1068. Mr. Whitfield, the next question is directed to you. What effect would the 3% tax have on the school districts, which Bob just mentioned? Would they have to raise their tax from 2%?
Apparently, there are still a number of people that's within radio listening that haven't been filled in on the past conversations. We've treated this subject fairly in detail in the past. I'd like to repeat it once again for those that might not have heard it previously. It has recently been ruled by the House Rules Committee in response to a bill that was introduced in the House by Dr. Boggan, a representative from Fairbanks, that no legislation which is designed to result in additional tax powers to school districts could be introduced, or nor would it be constitutional. So it's rather fairly conclusive that the school district in the Fairbanks Independent School District, nor any other school district in the state of Alaska, will have the power under their present structure to increase to a 3% sales tax.
Fine, Leonard. Well, while you're on here, we'll have you answer another one that Bob brought up on House Bill 204, which is the number of the House bill, which was held up by the city attorney in Juneau, would eliminate personal property tax all over the state. Why hasn't the city told the people about this potential law? It's still sitting in the House.
Well, as I mentioned a while ago, I wasn't familiar with the House bill, and I don't know, first of all, who introduced it, nor when it was introduced. But I look at it in this sense. I don't see what difference that it makes, whether or not the state of Alaska is proposing or planning, or if one of their representatives or other state legislators are attempting to propose eliminating personal property taxes on a statewide base. The fact is that the people of this community are concerned with its own issues and its own problems. The council of this city is charged with the responsibility of looking out for and caring for the needs of this community, not the whole state. And the fact is that we now have a proposition before the people of this city to take care of its own problems. And no amount of effort that might be put into the state legislature on a statewide basis could have any material effect one way or the other on our own problems.
I see. Fine. Thank you, Leonard. As a point of information, Bob, could you perhaps tell us when and who introduced this bill to the House?
It's my understanding it was introduced in February. I know definitely it was introduced by Representative Pratt of Anchorage. And it has been cleared by the Local Affairs Committee, and it has also been cleared, I understand, by the Finance Committee, but I don't know if that was for agreement on its particular tendency to relieve personal property tax or cleared for form. They go through two types of clearance down there. Now, actually, I believe in all fairness to the city, we should point out one thing. The legislature will soon enter and pass through its 60th day. If the city has not supported this bill, let us say that they have had their own reasons, and or possibly, as Mr. Whitfield, I'm sure, did not even know that it was in there. But it's a little late to bank on this right now. Under law, if it doesn't go through this time or if it isn't voted down, it will be carried over into the next session in 62. But this particular bill has been endorsed by two committees. It's there now. It has never met the floor, and no one knows what would happen to it.
Right. Thank you very much, Bob. Mr. Johnson, once again, we'll get right back to the issue of Ordinance 1068. Why should an individual have to pay taxes year after year on clothing or articles which may be years old? In other words, we have paid for these articles many times over.
I am inclined to agree with that. I don't believe you should pay on clothing at all, frankly. If you want my candid opinion, the opinion of our committee, clothing and personal items of that nature, such as bedding, linens, cosmetics, should be exempted. Now, we differ with this in this particular matter with the city administration. We believe that this is picayune. Now, as to other items, why should you pay year after year? You should pay on a scale which is constantly receding, becoming smaller. Now, according to our city forms, they say you can't go below 20% of the original value. At least that's the way that I read the form. I also take issue with this. I believe that a 1921 Stutz Bearcat that is not capable of running has almost no value at all. I believe that you should have the ability, as businesses do, to, in essence, write off. I believe that that's standard practice. But again, this is a matter of opinion. Now, I gather from this that I'm being asked to defend personal property. I have no intent of doing that. I'm willing to talk about the relative merits of it, but in defending the tax, and particularly, as we have seen it here, I don't feel it has much of a defense. I feel that it has only a defense when it is a comparative matter, as it is in this particular case. I feel quite definitely that it is to be preferred to the issue and the addition of another 50% increase in the sales tax.
Thank you, Bob. Leonard, what progress has the city made in acquiring new industries for the city? If there were more industries, why would there be a need for raising the tax?
First of all, I don't know where they find justification in the term raising the tax. I don't think anyone is attempting to raise the taxes. Secondly, you have to look at the position of the city's administration from a realistic standpoint. It's not a part of the prerogative nor the responsibility of the city's administration nor its legislative body to go out and to woo new industry. We have other types of organizations and other structures who devote their own professional talents and abilities and efforts for that purpose. The thing that we can limit our interest in that subject to is this, and that is to lower as much as possible the financial burden that would be imposed upon new industry if they were to come into this area. And I've mentioned on a number of occasions that in any area that has an excessive or a high ad valorem tax is a deterrent or a discouragement to new industry coming into that area. And for that reason, we're attempting to lower the ad valorem tax.
Bob, I understand that now, but you would like to make a couple of comments on this one also, though the question was directed to Leonard.
I definitely would, because when I served on the council, I had a diametrically opposed viewpoint, which I expressed then and which lost. So I guess that I was in the wrong then, and possibly I'm in the wrong now. But I definitely feel that the city is the only entity here with both the financial ability and the power to carry through the wooing, as Mr. Whitfield called it, of new industry. I feel that the city should do it, and do it now. I feel that the capital improvements, which we have waited so long for here, should be waited for just a little bit longer in some instances, and that money diverted to measures which would definitely produce more revenue for the city. Now, if someone wants me to be specific on this, I'll give the same list that I gave in 1958 and in 1959 to the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce. I still feel the same way. I feel we should take the step to make this airport a working international stopping point, and we can work with the state on this. I feel definitely that we should go in with the pioneers on Pioneer Park, and we should help them with that for one reason and one reason only. Every tourist we keep here, according to the state chamber, for another half day to go through that park, we have had another $17.50 from him. And if that's crass commercialism, then make the most of it, because tourism is an industry. I feel we should go ahead with the Aviation Hall of Fame, a matter which the Department of Interior will bill for us if we'll do the groundwork. I feel we should go ahead and make in Fairbanks the city land available to whoever wants it at whatever price. Get it on the tax rolls and get taxes back from it. Keep it from being non-productive. I feel that we should do everything in our power, including tax exemptions and everything else, for new industry. Bring it in. Don't keep it out. And I endorse 100% the holding down of ad valorem taxes, and Mr. Whitfield and I will never have to debate on that. We're on the same side.
All right, thank you, Bob. Leonard, back to you. Can you explain how Anchorage, the most progressive, quote, city in the territory, has survived all these years without any sales tax at all?
The quickest answer to that was to just look at their mill levy and compare it with the city of Fairbanks' mill levy. Their mill levy, I don't know what their present mill levy is, but I'm sure that somewhere between 2% and 3%, or 20 to 30 mills.
I see.
Well, I'd like to answer that once more, too.
Why, sure, Bob.
Anchorage levies 24 mills, and they do it on 70% assessed evaluation. And they have never gone to the 100% as Fairbanks has. And I'm sure that there are many local businessmen having stores in both places who know full well that their taxes actually are less in Anchorage on this basis.
Leonard, would you like to comment on that?
Just to clear up one point in comparing the 100% as opposed to the 70%. Chapter 174, again, of the 1957 session laws of Alaska provides, and I can't quote it verbatim, that the property subject to ad valorem taxes shall be valued at 100% of true value. Now, if Anchorage wants to use, by valuing their property at 100%, which they do value at 100%, and then assess it only at only 70%, or in other words, having a tax exemption in this guise, that's their prerogative to do that. The fact is that they have a broader tax base. How many more thousands and thousands of people are paying this tax load in the city of Anchorage than are paying it in this city? And that is the crux of this whole issue here, attempting to get more people paying the same number of dollars than to have just a few people paying a large number of dollars.
All right, Leonard, thank you very much. Bob, we'll get off on another tact here. Another question: although we live outside the city limits by one block and are property owners, we have no right to vote on this issue. But we're highly affected by it as we purchase everything within the city. Why are we subject to both taxes, personal property, and the sales?
I'm a little confused by this. Everyone is subject to both personal property and sales tax right now. The change will come after this election, or it won't come after this election. Now, I am not certain, and neither is anyone else among the attorneys I have talked to, as to whether the school district will, in truth, be able to collect personal property taxes if the city votes it out. In fact, carrying it one step further, I'm not sure the city can vote it out. And neither are some of these attorneys. I had that all settled in my mind up until last night, and I had a couple of them point out to me that if it's true that you can't add to the powers of the school district, then it must also follow that you can't detract from the powers of the school district under the definition of existing law. So I am frankly one of those that remains to be convinced, and I'm perfectly willing to let the court decide it, since the lawyers seem to have fallen out on this particular point.
Leonard, would you like to make a comment on that?
I don't propose to give out any legal opinions on this thing. The city of Fairbanks pays a reasonable salary to a full-time attorney for the purpose of guiding it on legal issues. I would like to say this, and I'd like to give you a quotation that led up to the city attorney's opinion on this subject. First of all, I'd like to read you the title to this act. Now, this is an act to provide a uniform procedure in assessing, levying, and collecting, including the foreclosure of, taxes among existing political subdivisions in Alaska with taxing authority. Now, section 37-3-53 of chapter 174 in this act states in part, residents of the independent school district living outside the city limits shall be allowed the same exemptions of taxes as is permitted within the city. Taxes shall be assessed, levied, equalized, and collected in the manner provided for assessment, levy, and equalization and collection of taxes by the municipal corporations. Now, to a layman, I don't see how that language could be any plainer than that language there, which provides that for whatever exemptions the city allows its taxpayers, the residents in the independent school district must also be allowed the same exemptions. So if the city of Fairbanks exempts to its residents personally, I'm sure that according to this section of Chapter 174, that the school district is going to have to do likewise, and that was the results, or that led up to the professional opinion of the city attorney.
Right, thank you, Leonard. Bob, did you want to comment on that again?
Just one thing, that is absolutely right, and up until last night, I was in wholehearted agreement with that. However, the state constitution, and I repeat this, the people voted it in, it says that school districts shall continue under existing law. Now, that was part of the existing law. It was also part of the existing law that personal property taxes would be levied within the city of Fairbanks and within the school district. Now, there is where the rub comes in. Did that refer specifically to only state laws, leaving the cities free to do as they please, and the state could not add to the powers of the school district nor detract from them? Or did that particular provision of the Constitution include cities and the lesser entities as well? Now, that I don't quarrel with the city attorney's opinion. In fact, I endorsed it 100% last night, up until last night, and lamented the loss of some $135,000 in personal property taxes in the school district. I only say now that I feel that this particular issue is far from settled, and I feel that it probably will have to be settled in the courts. I don't see any other way around it, because certainly if you can't add to their powers, you can't take from them. And the Attorney General has definitely ruled that you can't add to them.
Right, fine. Thank you, Bob. Gentlemen, we're running just a tiny bit short of time now, and I wonder if you could perhaps limit your answers within reason to as brief as possible, and we'll get in as many of these questions as we possibly can. All right. Mr. Whitfield, I understand that the City Council could pass this ordinance without bringing it to the vote of the people. Should the ordinance not pass, could the City Council now, or in the future, pass it anyway?
Well, I'm sure that they could. The fact that the people of the city of Fairbanks has had an opportunity to vote on this thing, it only reflects the council's willingness to give them an additional voice in the government of their city. And if they reject this ordinance, there is nothing, as far as I know, that would prevent the council from later passing it anyway.
I see. Fine. That cleared it up for us. Mr. Johnson, since you feel that those owning property and living outside the city limits would be taxed unfairly, don't you feel they should share in the cost of maintaining the city streets, city police, and other services they use when they're in our town?
I definitely feel that they are doing that right now. If we break down the population of the Fairbanks trading area, as released by the city in one of their statements, we find that we have some 38,000 people in the Fairbanks trading area. That place is 25,000 approximately outside the city and 13,000 within. At any ratio that you want to take it at, that's almost two-thirds outside and one-third in. If we break the sales tax down the same way on the basis of present receipts or projected receipts, we find that they will be paying approximately $640,000 per year into the coffers of the city of Fairbanks in the form of sales tax. Now, we may be getting $640,000 worth of street work. I don't know. I wouldn't question that or argue with it. But at the same time, I do believe that we are also getting from these people the stability which makes the community tick. I believe that every bit of this community, inside the city and outside, must work together. It cannot pull apart and work separately. I don't believe that the city of Fairbanks will find it financially feasible or even financially possible, to place the bulk of the burden, if they should so choose, on those outside the city and have them continue to support the city. One very seldom continues to feed a cow that he isn't allowed to milk. And I submit to you that while they're getting their share of the benefits, in a one sense, they definitely are not getting a bulk of the benefits or even a majority of them. The people inside the city get that.
Right, fine. Thank you, Bob. Leonard, do you not class seasonal workers as transients as well as the tourists who fill up those hotel rooms that Mr. Johnson mentioned?
Well, I was going to comment on that a while ago, but I didn't think it really worthy of comment. I'm sure that neither Bob nor anyone else would imply that all the transients are going to stay in hotel rooms. Transients, in my as far as my concept of it is concerned, is people that are here on a temporary basis. Now, that may be for 1 or 2 days, and they may stay in hotels for those 1 or 2 days, or it may be 1 or 2 weeks, 1 or 2 months, or maybe even 1 or 2 years. But to me, they're a transient if they don't have enough interest in the affairs of this community to invest in it on a permanent standpoint. And that to me, are transients.
Right. Bob, you'd like to comment on that?
I can't allow that to go by. I'm very sorry. Because that classes approximately 3,000 people in this town who now rent homes as transients. And I don't feel it's fair, nor do I feel that it is in fact true. I feel that home ownership here, where a house of roughly the $18,000 or $15,000 class in the States can run you up to $40,000 to $45,000, is indeed a privilege. You know, normally outside, where they have years and years of history behind them, they grade their housing clear down and everyone can find something he can afford if he's steadily employed and of a character who could get a loan or anything else to buy a home. That is not true in Fairbanks. There isn't the variety, and furthermore, there isn't the gradation within the housing element. Now, I don't believe that everyone who rents is a transient. I don't believe that at all. And I personally have invested in realty, and I have rented. I don't feel that that's fair. You're limiting, even as this proposes to do, the permanent occupants of the city to those who own property. You're limiting the financial future to them by this very, very act, the decision to incur debt. I can't agree with it. I think it's an error, and I think it's dangerous to the city to endorse or accept it as any status.
All right, fine. Leonard, would you like to comment back on that one?
Just one comment. I think that Bob's putting words into my mouth if he attempts to imply that I said that everybody that rented were transient residents. I didn't say that at all. I said that to me, a transient was a person who came here with the intent of being here only temporarily and didn't have the interest of enough of this city to become permanent residents. Now, they may or may not rent their homes. There are probably people here who are real property owners who are actually transients.
Right, fine. Thank you, Leonard. Leonard, while we have you here again, let's come back with another one right to you quick. If we pay sales taxes in Fairbanks, why can't we have fire protection? There's no area given on here. Evidently, it's Lameda or College or the South Side.
Well, under our present setup, unless we have a reciprocal agreement or a mutual aid agreement with other areas, we cannot take and give fire protection to any of the areas outside of the city.
Right, fine. And Leonard, we thought we'd let you bring that to the public. We, of course, knew that one anyhow. Bob, back to you again. Do you feel it's any more fair for businessmen not to be taxed on inventory than it is for a person not having to pay taxes on their savings accounts? And this is a repeat on this. He'd like a little bit more detail on it, if possible. Can you perhaps blow that one up just a tiny bit?
Well, let's put it this way. A businessman on his inventory tax, wherever possible, and it is possible in a majority of the cases, passes on to the public that inventory tax within his markup. A person taxed on a savings account pays a tax directly, and there is no way to either pass it on. It must be absorbed. Now, frankly and honestly, I believe here you have an excellent example of one particular fact which is rampant throughout the entire matter of personal property. A person having savings and knowing full well that they would be taxed as of January 1st would, in all likelihood, withdraw those savings from the bank and put them back in on January 2nd. This is legal. So far as I know, it is not immoral. And it is in no way anything other than a means of protecting his own savings. It would be an evasion of the tax. Merchants with their inventory cut down on their inventory. I think everyone knows of stores that have big sales during December to cut it down to bedrock. In one case, the tax is passed on, in the other, it isn't. As to fairness, I think it's a matter of opinion, but in my opinion, there isn't a great deal of difference. One could be taxed just as easy as the other, and it would be just as fair, I suppose. I really don't know. I'll be honest, I don't know.
Right, thank you, Bob. Well, I'm afraid the switchboard will just have to be closed now. We're fast running out of time. Mr. Whitfield, would you answer one more, please? How can the city honestly accept gratuities from businessmen to project the abolishment of the personal property tax?
Well, to my knowledge, there's no law that says that the city can't take gratuities. We take gratuities quite often because philanthropists or other people that may die and leave an estate may will that property to the city, and in that sense, it would be a gratuity. But as far as I know, that there's nothing that would prevent businessmen or other individuals of this city of making or providing the financing of airtime, which in their opinion would be provided for the propoundment or expedition of information that's of value to the people of the city.
Right, thank you, Mr. Whitfield. Gentlemen, we'd like to thank both of you very, very much for appearing here. KFRB has made this time available as a public service in order that the public might be completely informed before they go to the polls this Tuesday, March 21st. We wish to thank both Mr. Whitfield and Mr. Johnson for donating their time and their efforts for the benefit of the citizens of Fairbanks. KFRB urges you to vote this Tuesday on Ordinance 1068. This is Al Underwood reporting.
You're in tune with Full Range Radio for Alaska.
This tape recording was taken by Harry Hughes, a member of Pioneers of Alaska Eagle 4 at Fairbanks, Alaska, March the 19th, 1961 at Fairbanks, Alaska. And this is a personal message to members of the Pioneers organization in Juneau with the legislature, and only to be used in the manners allowed by law. Mr. Paul Griman, past president, Mr. Forbes Baker, president of Igloo 4, and Frank Chapados, trustee in Igloo 4, and Judge Lester Gore, past grand president, Governor Eaton, a member of Pioneers of Alaska, and all other members now in Juneau. I hope that this tape will be a benefit and a help to give you some of the public discussion and public statements in regard to these taxes, and I personally hope that the state and its legislators will abolish personal property tax in this state, as it is in many other states. About 18 states allow no personal property tax at the present, and the three states have abolished it years ago. A state sales tax is the only other answer, the same as Washington, Oregon, California, and a number of other states. I hope you complete your work at Juneau and you get back home with the people and we can go to work again. And everybody in the Pioneers Igloo 4 of Fairbanks, Alaska sends their greetings, and we hope you get the bill through for our park project, as we'd like to go to work this year on it. This is Harry Hughes. I'm signing off, and thank you, and good wishes to all of you.
Good enough.